Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Halliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first time deposit offer up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text next step to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 Hope line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome back to another episode of Growing Up the Same. I'm your host, Trevon Edwards. I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Madison. We have a special guest today, JJ Redick of the New Orleans Pelicans. What's going on, JJ?
What's up, y'all? Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, JJ. We appreciate it. JJ Redick is an American basketball player for the New Orleans Pelicans. He's been in the NBA 14 seasons, previously playing for the Magic, Bucks, Clippers, and 76ers. He's also famously a graduate of Duke University, as well as a podcaster. His new podcast, The Old Man and the Three, features co-host Tommy Alter. JJ, this is the one of the two. You ready?
All right. Yeah, let's do it.
Wine or beer?
Wine, all day.
Bourbon or Tennessee whiskey?
I'll go bourbon, but I have no strong inclination to ever drink whiskey, so.
Disneyland or Disney World?
Disneyland. Disneyland, yes.
Grant Hill or Elton Brand?
We'll go with the OOG, Grant.
John Wooden or Coach K?
Coach K.
Stan Van Gundy or Doc Rivers?
Ooh. Ooh. Oh, man. I'm going to go with Stan. Because if it wasn't for Stan, I would have never played for Doc. Stan punched me in the mouth. He got me right. He got me to where I could play in the NBA.
Nice. Pharrell or Timberland?
Pharrell.
Cardi B or Meg Thee Stallion?
Yo, I don't even know who Meg Thee Stallion is. So I'm going to say Cardi B.
I'm guessing you haven't heard WAP then.
There's some wars in this house. There's some wars in this house. I said certified free. 7 days a week. Make that game weak.
I listened to it for a hot second. That was it. I was out.
Chris Duhon or Jay Williams? Oof.
You know what? I played with C-Doo, so I'll say Chris.
White Man Can't Jump or Rocky?
White Man Can't Jump, for sure.
Cameron Indoor or the Staples Center?
Cameron.
The Tipping Point or Outliers?
Ooh. I'm going to say Outliers.
Yes, me too. Virginia or California?
Ooh. What part of California?
That's to say, Southern California.
Oh, man. I'm going to go with Virginia, honestly. I'm going to go with the home state.
Kenny Mayne or Dan Patrick?
Man, y'all are coming with some tough ones here. I'm going to say Kenny. Kenny. Kenny's my sense of humor. The dry humor is my sense of humor. So I'm going to say Kenny.
Big Cat or PFT?
Big Cat, because PFT can't spell my name right.
Can you spell anything right?
No.
Eminem or 50 Cent?
M.
Bobby Hurley or Christian Laettner?
Laettner, because he's the GOAT Duke player ever. He's the greatest.
Nice. Happy Gilmore or Billy Madison?
Happy Gilmore, by far. Not even close.
Scream or I Know What You Did Last Summer?
It's almost like which is the worst movie, you know? Which of those is worse? Because they're both so bad.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Nice. Mario or Sonic?
Sonic.
Nice. Animaniacs or Looney Tunes?
Looney Tunes.
Sopranos or The Wire?
Yo, I haven't seen either. It pains me to admit that. I haven't seen either.
The Wire is my favorite show of all time. You should definitely watch it if you get a chance.
All right. I will. Yeah.
Netflix or Hulu?
Netflix.
FLIR or Upper Deck?
I'm going to say FLIR because the basketball cards from the 80s are so iconic.
Yeah. Freshman year or senior year?
Senior year.
Audiobook or hard copy?
Hard copy, all day.
I can tell by your background.
Yeah. I got a lot of fucking empty shelves in this house, though. It's crazy, man. I'm about 3,000 books short right now.
Would you rather travel back in time or travel to the future?
Travel back in time.
Nice. Would you rather hurt your best friend or help your worst enemy?
Help, for sure. Help my worst enemy.
Podcaster or broadcaster?
Podcaster. I'll always choose long form over short form.
Mental health or physical health?
Wow. I got to say, man, the two go hand in hand, I think.
Yeah.
There's a mental benefit to being physically fit and working out. You know, your brain releases endorphins and dopamine. So I'm going to say physical.
Okay. Friends or Seinfeld?
Seinfeld.
Nice. And the last one, intelligence or empathy?
Empathy for sure.
Nice. Well, that was the one of the two. Thanks, JJ.
I love it.
That was great, man. Some good questions from Jason. He brings it every week. It definitely made you think a little bit hard on some of them. So, you know, for sure. Kudos to Jay on that one. So I'm going to jump right into it. What's the backstory behind JJ Shooter 3 at AOL.com?
Yeah, so that was my first email and my first like screen name, you know, my first handle, if you will. You know, we all had AOL Messenger, and I think I was either in eighth grade or ninth grade, and I like to shoot threes. And so it wasn't Shooter, you know, like I'm a Shooter, you know, I'm not, you know, abbreviate, you know, shortening Shooter. It was like JJ shoot a three, you know what I mean? So, went with that, put that out there, I think on Twitter a couple years ago, and still a little embarrassed about that handle, to be honest with you. But I feel like everybody had like really, like we didn't always think it through then. You know what I mean? We all had some wild shit back then.
To be fair, mine was The Schoolboy, D A S K O O L B O Y. And I kind of ran with that for like maybe 3 years. Black Planet, AIM, AOL, everything that you possibly could think of. That was my name based off of like Murphy Lee. like album, like one of his songs and stuff. And I just was like, all right.
Yeah.
Never thought. What were you going to say, Jason?
No, my first screen name was Jason Betha, like Mace.
Okay. Mace.
Clever. I like that one.
Yeah, that was
cool. I like that one. That's awesome.
So tell me about the Waste Management rap group.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so a little backstory. So when I was basically from like eighth grade on, I would write down rap lyrics. And I got to college, and like in high school, when I would go to AU tournaments or, you know, USA basketball camp or Nike camp, I would inevitably find myself in somebody's dorm room or somebody's hotel room in a cipher or a battle rap. And I loved rap. And so I would write these lyrics down. And then when I got to college, I had a buddy who played on the Duke soccer team, this dude, Ryan Curlew. And we would be in his room and we had like basically just like a headphone and little mouthpiece coming through. And we would, we'd rap over instrumentals. And then he started making beats. And then we like made a few songs, like original songs off that. But it was like the quality of the production was terrible. His beats were great, but you know, we didn't have like a studio or equipment. And then when I got to Orlando, you know, I still wrote raps or whatever. And Brian Anderson came and he was like, I make beats too. I can't rap. You make the rap, I'll make the beats. So we told the Orlando media that we were forming a rap supergroup called Waste Management. And it never really got off the ground. He did make a beat. So he made one beat and I wrote out two verses for it. And we had somebody write like a chorus for us, like the hook. And we never ended up recording it. And this, at the same time, Brandon Bass was like legitimately recording songs. And I think he put out a couple music videos as well. And so we were going to go with his producer. We never ended up doing it. And Ryan ended up using that beat because the beat was awesome. He ended up using that beat in like a contest for the Magic for their playoff anthem. So like anyone from Orlando could like basically take that beat and either alter it or, you know, keep it the same and add, you know, lyrics and whatever to it. So they used that as our theme song that year for the playoff run. I'm actually glad that I never recorded anything.
Oh man, I was hoping that you would drop it at 6 p.m. today or something, man.
Yeah, oh, would, man. Oh,
that would be great.
I actually talked, so the dude from Duke, Ryan, I connected with him on IG last week because I think I said this recently about this, and he reached out and he was like, yo man, he's like, I don't even know where those songs are. He goes, I know they exist somewhere in a computer that I have somewhere, but he's like, I don't know where they are.
Oh, so that would be amazing, man. All right.
Who would you compare yourself to as a rapper?
Oh, that's good. So I would say my biggest influences would be Tupac, Eminem, Nas, and Talib Kweli. So I was like a social conscious rapper, but then I would like delve into these like random like Eminem-ish, you know, like verses where I would just like spit like 8 bars in like 2 sentences, you know what I mean?
Lyrics coming at you with supersonic speed. Summon, you assuming I'm a human. What I gotta do to get it through to you? I'm superhuman, innovative, and I made a rubber. So that anything you say is sticking off of me and it'll glue to you. And devastating, more than ever, demonstrating how to give a audience a feeling. Levitating, never fading. And I know the haters are forever waiting for the day that they can say I fell off. They'll be celebrating, cause I know the way to get it motivated. I make elevating music, you make elevator music. Oh, he's too mainstream. Well, that's what they do when they get jealous, they confuse it.
Right. Or you just like the word play, so yeah, that would be my combo for sure.
Yeah, I like that.
That's amazing. all right, so I had a question about C-Doo because I have a relationship with him from growing up in Compton, which is kind of funny. But let's talk about your love for baseball and basketball cards growing up.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been like a weird sort of OCD collector when it comes to things. Like when I enjoy something and I like collecting it, I just go like full tilt. I go deep on things. And so right now it's wine. It was watches. When I was a kid, at first it was Playmobiles and G.I. Joe. My son, my 6-year-old, my oldest, he's obsessed with Legos. So he collects Legos. He builds like these pieces, takes him hours. He sits there, he builds them, and then he like puts them on his shelf. And he now has like a collection of all these amazing things that he's done. And then when I got into sports, I got into baseball cards at first, and then I got into basketball cards. And I mean, like anybody, like I would go to trade shows, I'd go to the shop and just browse. Me and my friends all, you know, we trade. And I remember one friend, his dad would always somehow be involved in the trade. Like he didn't want me to like take advantage of this kid or something. I don't know. My mom, when I moved into this house, my mom sent me like everything that she had in our attic in our house growing up. And I found my collection. And I got to say, it's pretty legit, man. Like I still have all the sleeves or whatever, you know, the pages of sleeve. They're like, it's funny to look back, because I stopped collecting when I was like 12 or 13. I had such OCD then, like everything, every page is like by the player, and it goes like by the year this way. And then you turn the page and then, you know, whatever. So I have like 45 Michael Jordan cards. I think I have 3 Kobe Bryant rookie cards. I have a ton of Griffey cards, a ton of Frank Thomas, Albert Bell, Manny Ramirez, Barry Bonds. Yeah, it's a like legitimately. I was like, oh, I actually had a pretty good collection. Did y'all collect cards?
Yeah. So yeah,
I got some right here. I'm tempted to show you some right now. But,
go for it. You can go.
Do you have a Jordan rookie card?
I don't have a Jordan rookie card. I have an Iverson rookie card. I actually traded one of my biggest regrets in life was I traded my Kobe rookie card to my cousin. For like, I don't even know what it was. It was like a Gary Payton signature card and 3 other things. Like, you know, it was just a silly trade. Like you said, your dad or the kid's dad didn't want it. Like, my cousin took advantage of me right there. Like, you know, it was just a bad trade. But I still do have my Iverson rookie. I got a bunch of Dream Team cards. I got, you know, everybody from the 90s from like, you know, I posted a bunch on Twitter, like from Rod Strickland to whoever, Bo Outlaw, all the random players, like, you know.
Yeah.
I don't have a card, but I have this.
Oh, wow. And you kept that from when you were a kid.
Oh, man. So we had Pablo Torre on a couple of weeks ago, and he told us a story about him playing at a basketball court, and he was being really generous and just like let this kid look at his binder of cards. And he comes back from playing basketball and all of his Jordan cards were stolen.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's just like, he would love to get back into cards now, but he's just like so like traumatized from that moment of just trying to recover those cards. And it's just like, man. But we were thinking about rehashing that career, like collecting cards.
I would
again.
Be devastated. Yo, I don't know if y'all pay attention to Gary Vee on Twitter, but he's gone full on collector mode. And the stuff he's collecting like Wilt Chamberlain's, Jordan rookie cards, Akeem Olajuwon rookie cards. Matter of fact, I went to Gary Vee's office in New York like 2 years ago, and Gary Vee's high energy. I don't know if you know him at all, but he's like high energy. So he's doing his thing. You know, he's talking to me, and all of a sudden he looks at his wall, and he's got all this sports memorabilia on his wall, and he grabs like 4 Akeem Olajuwon rookie cards.
Wow.
And he's like, I'm telling you, man, this is the future. In 50 years, these cards are going to be worth 10x what they're worth now. Like, all right, man.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, like, I feel like there's, you know, stamps or coins. Like, there's so many different things that people collect. Who knows? I mean, is there really any value in a piece of cardboard? There's really not. There's really not.
Yeah.
So the first card I put out is Cliff Robinson.
Rest in peace. Uncle Split.
And I'm just scrolling through, and I have a David Robinson rookie card right here.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. That's nice.
So, yeah, I got a bunch of stuff in here. I got everybody, man. I got Zeke. I got Grant Hill right here.
Oh, I had some Grant Hills. Yeah.
Yeah,
jersey
so,
too.
I got everybody, man. I was definitely in a collective.
We were talking about this, by the way, all those 90s cards. When I was going through the 90s cards, I realized the NBA jerseys from the 90s, that was the best era for NBA jerseys.
Easy call.
Far.
For sure.
Easy. It's not out yet, but in my next episode for my podcast, we rank all-time NBA jerseys, and I think four of my five were from the 90s. Mm-hmm. I think that was the best era because those fits too, like the length of the mm-hmm. shorts, the mm-hmm. jerseys weren't like super baggy like they were in the early two, like
it was heavy mesh jerseys too.
In the early 2000s. Yeah, yeah, it was yeah. just those were so clean back then.
Yeah, the Raptors, the Grizzlies jerseys that first came out, the Suns jerseys. I mean, there was a bunch of fly jerseys.
Here we go. Here we go. Right here.
The Kings.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love yes. the All Star jerseys where they had like the. Was that in Phoenix where
the cactus?
The cactus yes. on that yeah. was like All Star yeah. jerseys ever.
Yeah.
San Antonio's teal. It's some yes. good ones though, man. When you really think about it, I love Mitchell and Ness for being able to help us relive that stuff. Tell me a little bit about fort building. You mentioned it earlier.
Yeah, that was probably another one of my obsessions. So, when I was three, we moved from Tennessee. We moved to a little town outside Charlottesville called Keswick, and my parents they bought the property for like $100,000. I can't believe they sold it. It's worth like 10x that now, but they bought it for $100,000, 13 acres. And we would just go out in the woods every day and explore. And so we found this little clearing in the woods, me and my older sisters, and we built like an entire village. And then when we moved to Roanoke, which was in the mountains, that was even more fun. Cause then we would like build these treehouse forts. We would come upon these rocks like built into the side of the hill and we'd build a fort around that. So I probably did that until like middle school. I probably till I was like 12 years old, I would just go out in the woods and I was homeschooled till fifth grade. So I would get my work done in the morning. I'd go shoot hoops for a little bit and then I'd just leave till dinner time. I'd be out in the woods for like 4 or 5 hours till dinner time. Now that I think about it, I really didn't have a lot of toys when I was growing up. When I say I collected Playmobil, I had one set. It was Fort George. I found it on eBay the other day. I was thinking about buying it. It was Fort George. That was the one set I had. And then with G.I. Joe's, I probably had like three. But like I kept those things meticulous, mm-hmm. meticulous.
So I had a question. When did you become J.J. and move on from Jonathan Clay?
Ooh. You know what? I always owned it for as long as I could remember because my older sisters were like my heroes. They were 5 years older than me. They're identical twins. So by the time I have any memories, it's me being JJ. And I got it because they would say everything at the same time when they were kids. So people would ask what my name was and they would say JJ like that. Cause my dad called me Jay, Jonathan for, you know, Jay for short for Jonathan. My middle name is Clay. So JJ stuck. When I was like 12, I told my mom, I was like, I'm so tired of telling this story about why my name is JJ. Can I get it legally changed to Jonathan James? And she's like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. No, you cannot do that. So I love it now because clay, my parents were potters. That was their profession. My dad was a clay potter. My mom was a sculptor. We first lived on a like a legit commune in the middle of nowhere in Tennessee. And they were, you know, artsy and hippies. And so now being able to connect that to my name, my middle name, Clay, is awesome. I didn't have that perspective, of course, when I was 12. I will say this, my 94-year-old grandmother, she's the only person who ever has called me Jonathan that I can remember and is the only person that still calls me Jonathan.
Yeah, I think now just obviously being, even when like being a basketball player myself and then hearing about you, you're 83 or 84?
84.
Okay. So yeah, I'm 85 and yeah. I would be checking, you know, the different rankings and stuff. And it would be just different names. And then I remember when, so this is my C-Doo story, right? His dad, Pokey, is from Compton and C-Doo is from Louisiana, Slidell, yeah. I think. And
yeah, Slidell.
He would come to Compton every summer. And his cousin Guy used to live across the street from me. And before his senior year, he came to visit and we went to hoop at Compton College. And we were recruiting him at Dominguez High School with Tyson Chandler and a couple yeah. other guys. And at that particular time, they're like, Chris is number one player in the country. So I'm like, no, he's not, right? I'm young. I'm like 14 at this time, getting ready to go into ninth grade, and Chris is just killing. And a lot of people don't remember that Chris was averaging maybe under 26 points per game at that time. He was a scorer before he came to Duke. So I just normally bugged out. And that's the only time I actually rooted for y'all was when Sidhu was playing for Duke. Like, I'm a LA guy through and through, but like, he was the first person that outside of Tyson Chandler, was the first person I knew personally to say, oh, they going to NBA. You know, like, I'm going to just roll with whatever, you know what I mean? So, and it's so funny. How do you feel, for one? Also, I want to thank you for shotgunning a beer for Bubble Life, because that was our account. But how did it feel? Because I think some people hold on to collegiate stuff, right? And they just hate Duke sometimes. They feel like Duke is just this entitled, you know, institution. How did it feel to be received? I respect the honesty, Jason. How does it feel to be received on, like, because when you shotgunned a beer for us, everybody across was like, wow, like, I didn't expect him to do that. Like, what, how did it feel as far as, because I don't know if they're particularly like gained more fans off of that, but it was also like, hey, JJ's like me.
Right. First of all, you know, I shotgunned a lot of beers at Duke. All right.
You did it. You did it like a pro. So it wasn't a Jordan Clarkson shotgun.
It's been a few years since I did that. Who wrote the tweet, by the way? Who was the person
Drew that actually Ruiz. Wrote the tweet? So Drew Ruiz. Okay, yeah. He just started like, hey, what about 10K? I'm like, JJ has no clue. We know the internet too well. This is going to happen in 2 hours. Like, but also great for you to honor this, because I was just like, you know.
No, I was definitely going to honor it. I thought 10K, I thought maybe like, maybe by tomorrow, like it might be close. And then like 4 hours later, I was like, oh no, I'm doing this.
It was so crazy that Meyer jumped in. I was thinking like,
He was so thirsty. Well, I don't get that. Why was he came out of the blue. He's like, I'll shotgun a beer. And they're like, nobody asked you to shotgun a beer, dog, but whatever. I mean, Myers is clearly a champ when it comes to that.
NBA Bubble Life, and just so I have proof that this is an incredibly full beer, you can see that there. It's a 12-ounce Coors Light. Cheers, everybody.
To answer your question, though, you know, I first of all, nothing could have prepared me for the sort of hate and animosity that I got at Duke. But I feel like I've always tried to just be normal. I've tried to be myself. And, you know, I think there's a large portion of like the college basketball, you know, fandom that has come around to, at the very least, tolerating me. I wouldn't say like liking me or whatever, because there is just this, you know, negative association because I played for Duke. And look, I recognized if I had played, let's say, at University of Texas or University of Florida or something like that, I probably wouldn't have had to deal with it at that level. I still probably would have got some backlash. But a lot of that I recognize now is because I'm older, you know, it was just because, you know, I was a Duke, and I guess apparently I'm in a long line of hated Duke players.
So what happened last week? What's your perspective of being called white boy on a basketball court, and your perspective on the incident between Montrez and Luka? Now, normally on a basketball court, that's kind of like not on the double racist thing. It's kind of like, white man can't jump, I got the white boy, or whoever, right? Yeah. And it's always these stereotypes too. When you walk on a court, everybody always thinks, especially in a black neighborhood, thinks that if he's white, he can shoot. Or he's not athletic. And it's just like, sometimes I remember the first dude that I played with in college, right? This dude could go between the legs, East Bay, all kind of stuff. And I was just in awe because I played for an all-black high school team, you know? So by the time I got to college, I was just like, yo, the stereotype is, you know, this is different, dude. And the same thing, the disrespect for shooters. Like, oh, you got to guard a shooter, just face guarding. It's like, nah, it's some dudes that can slash.
Right. When I was 12 years old, 13 years old, you know, and I'd come in a game, you know, as soon as I came in the game, they'd be like, shooter. And I'm like, you've never seen me play. Like, we're in Beckley, West Virginia right now. You don't know. I could be laying bricks. You have no idea. One of the things, so first of all, I've never taken offense to that because I've always heard that. You know, it's always been a normal thing. And at times it's said out of like sort of respect and love, I think. And at times maybe it's said in a negative connotation. I don't take it at all as racist. You know, I had this long conversation one time, this is off topic, but I had this long conversation with Jimmy Butler one time about like whether or not black people can be racist, you know, in America. What Kenny Smith said about the power aspect, right? A black person calling a white person a white boy on the court, there's no power in that. And so much of racism is elevating one race above the other, right? So I've never taken offense to that. And I've always felt comfortable talking about race because of basketball. Basketball has given me this incredible vehicle to expand my worldview. I mean, I've talked about it with you guys in the last, you know, 20 minutes. Like, I grew up in the sticks. I grew up in the woods. I was not exposed to things until I started playing basketball, until I started being able to travel. Like, my AU team, I played for Boo Williams, and my AU team, which was based in Hampton, which was 4.5 hours away from, yeah, the greatest AU program ever. And we went to Brazil. The summer I turned 17, we went to Brazil. That was an eye-opening experience. I got to play in two world championships, you know, 19-under and 21-under championships, Argentina and Greece. You know, so I played in China three times for the global games, you know, with the NBA. So I played all over the world, and I've been exposed to so many people, so many different viewpoints. And because of that, I've always been comfortable talking about race. And Mark Cuban said this on my podcast, which came out today, but Mark Cuban said most white people in America are not comfortable talking about race. And it's one of the reasons that when we talk about some of these things, the immediate instinct for white people is to get defensive. Because look, no one is saying that white people don't have problems, right, or white people haven't faced adversity. What they're saying is there's a system, there's institutions in place that have held black people back for generations. So that is two totally different things. We are all human, and we are all subject to adversity. What we're talking about is these institutional and systemic biases. And if you're not willing to acknowledge that, then that's where I think some of this problem is. And that's why I think white people as a whole, we have to get more comfortable talking about race.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly, JJ. I was curious, what was the end result, or I guess the conclusion of that conversation you had with Jimmy Butler?
I actually came around. I agreed with him, and you know, it was 20 minutes before a game. We were sitting on the training table in the locker room, but it what he said echoed what Kenny said. I think. I'm not saying, and I'm not agreeing that with the idea that a black person or a brown person can't have like hatred in their heart. They can't have hatred in their heart. But in this country in particular, when we talk about racism, we're talking about white people. And that's right. Look, we can go back to 1619 on that.
Right. And a power dynamic, right? And
yes, exactly.
With the racism concept implies in America is that you can't necessarily be racist. Like you said, you can have a hatred in your heart, yes, for another group, but it's not going to manifest itself in the same way that a white person's racism would towards a black or a brown person, because they can actually oppress you with their racism by calling the police or doing other things that will, you know what I'm saying, will yeah. change the direction of your life immediately.
No yeah. doubt. Totally agree. I agree.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. My last question before I pass it off to Jason to close us out. Did you know that you were prematurely revealing the Ready for Change Dame 6?
As soon as I hit the send button, I was like, fuck, was I supposed to send that out? I did not know. As soon as I hit send, I was like, yo, because I got back from practice And there was a box sitting outside my hotel room. And it's, you know, Adidas size 13, Dame 6. I'm like, cool. You know, I brought four pairs with me. This, I'll have an extra pair. And took a shower after practice, or cold tub, took a shower. I opened the box and I saw the shoes and I was like, oh my God. I took a picture of them and I put it out. And then within 10 seconds, I was like, yo, I wonder if I was supposed to do that. I wonder if I was supposed to wait on that.
Yeah. So my buddy, Nick DePaula, obviously he covers, you know, most of the sneaker drops and stuff like that. And we were just sitting there watching like, yo, I think he prematurely rolled this out because I know the campaign was coming soon, but it was just like, all right, whatever. Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure he just kind of missed the memo or that, or didn't. Nobody really told him, you know, so it was
nobody even told me they were coming. That's the thing.
Okay.
That's the thing. So when I got him, I was like, oh, I actually, so Dame and I have talked about this a bunch. Every time, you know, we play against each other, you know, he says something about me wearing a shoe. So I was just like, oh, Dame sent me some shoes, or like my Adidas rep sent me the shoes. And there was no memo, there was no email, there was no like heads up, like, hey man, on Thursday, use this hashtag. Like, there was none of that. So I just put the picture out and I was like, oh, these are fire. I mean, these are awesome.
And indeed they were. Yeah, so that was great. Funny because I was just kind of sitting there like, did he know that?
I did, just too late.
Yeah.
Too late.
All good.
So, JJ, tell us about your 3-4-2 shot tradition, and when did that start?
Man, so this probably started, so after my second year in the league, when I played 8 minutes a game and even like less than I did my rookie year, when I only played in like 40 games. I played 34 games my second year. I went back to Duke for like 2 months and I trained like I train now. That was the first summer where I was like 6 days a week. I take Saturdays off, you know, doing my conditioning, lifting. So I come back, you know, I change my body. So the rest of the summer in Orlando, I was like, I got to keep this Sunday shooting up. But I also don't want to like kill myself, because the previous summer I had worked so hard that when I got to training camp, I felt burnout. And I was like, yo, the season hasn't even started yet and I feel burnout. So I was like, I got to figure out a way to shoot on Sundays, but not have it be taxing on my body. So I started shooting spot shots and then some one dribble stuff. And by the end of that summer, I just would have this routine. So what it is it's 20 threes, 20 made threes from seven spots, 20 made twos from seven spots, three 1 dribbles going right from seven spots, 3 1 dribbles going left from seven spots. And then after each one of those four sets, I shoot 5 free throws. So there's 20 free throws. So it's 140, 140, 42, 20. That's 342. So I've done that now for 12 off seasons. It's so boring. I gotta be honest with you. I mean, it's so boring.
Disciplined and regimented guy, so it seems to fit very well.
Yeah, when Tommy and I, my co-host on the Old Man and the Three podcast, when we started the Old Man and the Three and our podcast company, we were trying to come up with names for the company, and I was like, let's do something around 3-4-2, because that's an important number. Actually, I think it was my friend Sean Feeney, who's on our little group chat. He runs some restaurants in New York. He's become a close friend. He knows about this, so he was like, "Why don't you do this?" But it's now like people know this. I was telling D'Angelo Russell the other day, last summer for free agency, I never met with Minnesota because I committed so early to the Pelicans, and Gerst, their GM, was like, he said to my agent, can we send JJ our little care package that we had planned for him? And so I said, sure. And so they sent me a bunch of stuff. It was like jerseys for my kids, some gifts for my wife. But one of the things in there was like a custom pair of Adidas basketball shoes that had painted like this 3-4-2 logo on the tongue. So it was sick, man.
Dope. So I went to Fairfax with one of your former collegiate teammates, Jamal Boykin.
Yeah.
And he told me that when you guys played Maryland, that some of the fans there had pictures of your younger sisters in the stands. And I was just wondering, like, what was it like dealing with that type of hostility and, like, overall foulness as a college player?
Yeah. Look, there were some fans that certainly crossed the line. There were, you know, signs about my little sister, who I think was, like, 12 at the time. There was some references to like back doors with my little sister, just like really sick shit. There was a fan, my junior, senior year at Florida State, who during warmups, no matter where I went, he would like go behind the bench or go behind the basket or go behind the student section. He just kept following me, and he kept screaming profanities and like sexual lewd acts that he was claiming he had done with my sisters. I have three sisters. And the crazy thing was the arena security wasn't doing anything. And I was like, yo, can you handle my mans over here? Right. They didn't do shit. And I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And I had to deal with that. I mean, there was a group of Maryland fans my sophomore year who like somehow got my cell phone number, and they would call me like all hours of the day, all hours of the night, and they'd scream things into the phone. I changed my number like 7 times that year. They just kept getting it. I figured at some point it was like, all right, there's a leak. One of my friends is the leak. You know, somebody right. keeps doing this. Yeah. You know, I think they called me the Antichrist or something like that. But it was like, I'm 19, man. Like, I don't know how to deal with this. So it was tough. But, I got over it. I hold no ill will towards any fan base,
right.
except for Maryland. You know? Right. Fuck Maryland fans, legitimately, man.
It is.
Hey, Evan Burns went to Fairfax. Didn't
yes,
he?
Yes,
yes, he did. Yes, he
did. Yeah.
Man, look, yeah. Evan. So he was my McDonald's class, and I know he got hurt, had a serious knee injury in college, but like he was so talented, man. I thought he was going to be a 15-year NBA player. He's like, because even now, like you look at, I mean, he was like 6'7", wingspan, athletic, could shoot. I thought he was going to be a pro for sure.
Yeah, I got a chance to play against him. Go ahead. So I was just saying, like, more so watching Evan, dude, he was supposed to be the next one, you know, and obviously injuries happen. And the same thing, we got a chance to talk to last week. Well, we didn't have him on the show, but I was in a part of a Zoom call with Shea Cotton. And Shea Cotton also, you know, explain like just different things. And I know it's tough as athletes sometimes not reaching their goal, but then also finding a different purpose. And I hope that Evan, you know, got a chance to reach, you know, a different goal in life. Cause you know what I mean? Like as athletes, it's so much pressure from your neighborhoods and families to make it out. And then when you return, you know, just the ills of the world sometimes can kind of draw you to the wrong things if you're not getting there, especially, you know, in the black community too. So
yeah,
I really felt for him, man. I was a freshman when he was either a junior or senior at Fairfax, and I used to see him walking around all the time. And you know, I know the big story was basically like his SAT scores weren't high enough to get, you know, to the next level. And it's just unfortunate that, you know, that stops so many guys from, you know, get in there. There was no G League at the time or anywhere for somebody like him to go. So, you know what? That actually, I was trying to figure out what my last question was going to be to you, but that actually leads me to what I think my last question should be. Do you think the NCAA should pay players? And did you feel like that in college?
I didn't feel like that in college, but looking back, I should have been paid.
Yeah.
I think you gotta rethink the entire system. I think it was Mina Kimes put up some articles about 2 weeks ago, and I read one of them, and it was talking about, you know, one of the arguments is like, well, all of these revenue driving sports, well, not all of them, but there's two of them, men's basketball, you know, men's football, you know, they're supplementing the rest of these athletic departments. So you couldn't have these athletic departments, you know, these other sports like lacrosse or tennis or whatever it may be. But if you look at a D2 athletic department or a D3 athletic department, they're not generating revenue and they're able to fund sports at that level. So, the issue is, you know, the money's got to be spent. And so they're spending that money on a nicer bus or nicer locker rooms or, you know, PJs or whatever it may be.
Coaches' salaries.
Yeah, coaches' salaries, administrators' salaries. You got defensive coaches in high college football that are making over $1 million a year. Like, let's put that money in the kids' pockets. Let's put it in the kids' pockets. They're the product. they're the labor right now. It's a rigged system where the labor is free, and you know, you can't make the argument anymore that high level NCAA sports is amateur sports. It's not amateur sports. They're professionals in every sense of the word, except they don't get paid. And right. And also they're athlete students. I live that. I didn't get to choose the major I wanted to choose. I didn't get to take the classes I wanted to take at Duke because it was all based on the practice schedule. And I didn't choose public policy as my major because I didn't want to have to deal with the amount of tutoring that it took for econ. Because I was like, I'm going to be in the gym, whatever, 5-6 hours a day. I knew that. I don't have the time to do an hour of tutoring every day so I can pass econ. So I chose history because it was easier. And I still had to do my math credits, but I did the statistics route and computer programming instead of econ.
Wow. Yeah.
All right. Here's a question that we ask our guests every time they're on the show at the end. What advice would you give 18-year-old JJ?
Party less. This is at Duke. Party less. Kill for 2 years and go win a chip and go to the league. I went to Duke with the mindset I was going to be a four-year player, and that stunted me my first 2 years because I realized how tough it was to play at Duke, how much was demanded of me, and I went to a bad place, and my sophomore year was like a wasted season. And had I gone in with a different mindset of like, I'm going to focus on hoops, I'm going to do everything academically, because I didn't go to – like my first 2 years, I barely went to class. You know, I was – I think I had like a 1.7 my sophomore year. And then my junior and senior year, I was all ACC academic both those 2 years because I actually went to class and I did my stuff on time and I paid attention and all that and I worked. But yeah, I would have just said kill for 2 years and go to the league.
Man.
Gotta make a living, man.
Have to make a living. Gotta make a living, man. Well, JJ, man, this has been a great episode, man. Thank you again for taking your time and to talk to both of us. And hopefully we can be on cross platform one time on a topic that makes sense for us.
For sure. I appreciate you guys. Keep doing your thing. You guys are killing it.